Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
We do know that John Feinstein is on with us. He joins us every Monday, recapping the big headlines from the weekend nationally. John, how are you?
I'm good, Jonathan. You're the one on the left, right?
Well, actually, yeah. If you're facing us, he is.
Yeah, well, I'm facing you, aren't I?
Yeah, absolutely. Perfect. Yeah. You nailed it.
I'm very proud of myself.
John, Brett McMurphy continues to have tons of info at his disposal on Ohio State and everything that's going on there. At what point do you think he his sources run out of info to feed him? Because it's amazing what details he releases every other day.
Well, I think once you have a source or sources on a particular topic, Jonathan, they're not likely to go away or unless you do something to betray them. And I don't know what Brett McMurphy's relationship is with his sources up there, but obviously that hasn't been the case. It is still an evolving story. Different versions keep coming out from different sides every day. So I don't see any reason why they would dry up. Brett covered college football for a long time while he was at ESPN, obviously developed a lot of sources. I know the Ohio State people hate him and want to try to make him the issue rather than right. Urban Meyer and Zach Smith, but he clearly is very well plugged in up there.
You know, a couple things jumped out to me. The one that dropped on Friday, clearly the most salacious with all the sexual details of Zach Smith and everything going on there. I found it interesting that Brett McMurphy published the text exchange with him and Zach Smith's attorney in that, where Zach Smith's attorney is threatening Brett McMurphy, saying that he's going to get sued or he's going to go to court if he releases this information. And then Brett McMurphy's response to that the entire time. Just journalistically, John, what did you make of that and the decision to actually put in print those text exchanges?
Well, if somebody threatened me, I would certainly go public with it. I'm terrible at texting, so it would probably not be over text. But if somebody threatens me because I believe that I'm writing material that's legitimate and well-reported and well-sourced, I would certainly go public with those threats. I mean, I've been threatened before, usually physically. I think only once was I threatened legally on something, and it was a total bluff, and I called the guy's bluff, and he backed down. But you know, if somebody threatens you, there's no reason not to let people know what the person's doing.
You know, John, I brought up the question about McMurphy and the source because you got some good ones here, no doubt. But if I'm Ohio State, you know, they wanted to do this investigation in, 14 days or something?
Right.
I'm concerned with McMurphy's source because he's continuing to release information. And if I'm Ohio State and I'm behind the scenes with this investigation internally, I've got to make sure that everything is thorough. I can't put a timetable on this the way they did.
You know, I agree with you. And we're seeing something similar going on up here at Maryland where they have two separate investigations going on, one into the death of Jordan McNair and one into the culture within the Maryland football program. And today, Chick Hernandez, who's a reporter up here who worked in TV for many years up here and who is a Maryland graduate, has tweeted that the Board of Trustees decided on Friday that it's going to fire the president, the athletic director, and the football coach. Now, if Chick's got it right, and I know Chick has a lot of sources at Maryland, then that kind of blows up the whole notion that, you know, we're going to go through this process, and when we reach the end of this process, then we'll make our decisions on what to do next. And I think Ohio State has a similar problem with McMurphy.
John, and we're going to get to Maryland here shortly also. One more question, though, on the Ohio State situation and the story. Nothing really jumped out to me, quite honestly. It does not surprise me that men in power are having extramarital affairs or that they're doing stuff with staffers in the offices and all of that stuff. What did jump out to me, though, was that Zach Smith was ordering sex toys to the Woody Hayes complex being delivered there. That makes me ask a lot of questions about an assistant coach that would do that while working for a guy like Urban Meyer. And it just raises a lot more questions to me about, was Urban Meyer really in control? Did he care? That's a really brazen move to make for anyone in any profession, in any business, especially if you're a football coach at Ohio State. That is the part of the story to me that jumped out more than anything else.
I think your second question, Chad, is probably the one that hits home more. Did he care?
Yeah.
I mean, let's remember, Urban Meyer first knew about Zach Smith having domestic issues with his wife in 2009, when Zach Smith was still at the University of Florida. He brought him to Ohio State. Now, how much due diligence did he do in bringing him to Ohio State on what had happened in the interim from 2009 to 2011 when he hired him at Ohio State? I don't know. And you know, I know there are a lot of people who want to say there was no arrest in 2015, but boy, there's a lot of smoke, isn't there, around this marriage. And it may be that both people, you know, again, we just don't know, that both people share some responsibility for what went on. But when I watch an interview on TV and Zach Smith says that the bruises, his word, the bruises that his wife had were defensive, my eyebrows go up. And when Urban Meyer, when, you know, I don't care how you spin it or what question he was responding to, Urban Meyer said at Big Ten Media Days, I knew nothing in 2015. That's what he said. He didn't say, I didn't know about an arrest. There was none. He said, I knew nothing. And then had to put out a statement a few days later saying, yeah, I did know something, and I reported it to my bosses. So I have a lot of questions, and I'm sure you guys have been on Twitter and on the internet, and Ohio State people are out there defending Urban Meyer, and this is all, you know, that it's in Courtney Smith's imagination, and there's something wrong with her. You know, one of those cases where the victim is now becoming, in the minds of these people, the perp. It's just a sad situation. I mean, clearly something was wrong with Zach Smith. Something was wrong. Whether you want to say he was guilty of domestic abuse or domestic violence legally or not, something was wrong. And until his hand was forced a month ago, Urban Meyer for 9 years did nothing about it.
So, John, I teased it before the break, but if you're running Maryland right now, what would you do in this situation? What do you think will happen with the administration currently at Maryland moving forward?
Well, Chad, my guess is, as I mentioned before the break, that my friend Chick Hernandez has this story right. He's, as I said, he's very well sourced at Maryland. And part of the story he's saying is that Gary Williams will be named the interim athletic director, which would make sense because Gary's already working there as a fundraiser, and nobody knows Maryland better than Gary Williams. But I might have mentioned this to you last week. I don't remember if we got into this in much detail. The Maryland Athletic Department has been a dumpster fire for years now. This is not an isolated incident. This dates back to when Debbie Yao was the athletic director before she left for NC State. She built a huge budget deficit by trying to build onto the football stadium, build luxury boxes, which they did not need. They certainly didn't need more seats in that football stadium. Created a huge deficit. They had to eliminate 7 non-revenue sports after she had left when Kevin Anderson took over as the athletic director. Then they were forced, basically, to join the Big Ten because they had such a huge deficit, and the Big Ten TV money could help bail them out over a long period of time. And it has helped. But in the meantime, they have a football program that can't compete in the Big Ten East. Maryland cannot compete in football with Michigan, Michigan State, Ohio State, Penn State. They have to play all four of those schools every year, not to mention playing teams like Wisconsin and Nebraska and Iowa in the West. Not every year, but, you know, every couple of years. So they're in an impossible situation with football. They have a huge deficit, and they have a president, Wallace Lowe, who really doesn't understand anything about sports. He's not a sports fan. He and Kevin Anderson clashed over fundraising. Kevin Anderson was forced out. They gave the job to Damon Evans, who was already tarnished by a DUI at Georgia. And then 2 weeks after this terrible incident with Jordan McNair, he dies. And then shortly after that, they name Damon Evans as the full-time AD. Well, at that point, you need an AD who's, you know, purer than Caesar's wife. And instead, they just named Damon Evans. I don't know Damon Evans, by the way. He might be a great guy, and people make mistakes, and they're entitled to second chances. But a lot of this has to do with timing and perception. And I think probably the best thing Maryland can do is clean house. Having said that, you asked the follow-up question in the tease, Chad, who would you hire as football coach? My question would be, who wants the job? It's a coach-killer job.
Yeah, and that's the hard part, though. They're going to have a football coach. I mean, do you go down a level and try to find a guy who's been successful? I mean, there's got to be someone out there that
wants
that job.
Maybe you look at a guy like Mike Houston, who's done such a tremendous job at James Madison and is a couple hours down the road, and for the money involved in moving up a level, maybe a guy like Mike Houston would be willing to make that sort of move and understand that if he goes 7-6 in a given year, he's probably going to be Big Ten Coach of the Year. You mentioned Jeff Monken last week, Chad, I think. And I said to you that if Jeff Monken at Army or Kenny Amatalolo, who's right down the road at Navy, yep, who I think are two of the best coaches in the country, were contacted by Maryland, I would drive to either place and get on my hands and knees and say, don't do it. Speaking as I consider them both friends.
Yeah.
It's a hard, hard job. And obviously this entire debacle makes it that much harder.
You know, for Maryland and Rutgers, the Big Ten makes sense only financially.
That's right.
From a competitive standpoint, it does not make any sense at all.
Right.
I am curious, John, if we're ever going to get to a point where one of these conference decisions that's happened recently, someone's going to go back on it and decide to either join a different league, or that league is going to decide, you know what, it just didn't work out. Maybe it's Maryland. Maybe it's Rutgers. Maybe it's West Virginia in the Big 12. Maybe it's Missouri in the SEC. I don't know what program it is.
Right.
Do you think that someone is going to have to make that decision, or someone's going to have to make that decision for that program, that it's in the best interest for everyone for them to move on?
Well, it's an awfully tough thing to do, Chad, because, for example, let's say as part of this house cleaning, the Maryland people said, you know what, we've made some money by being in the Big Ten, and we want to go back to the ACC because we can compete in the ACC in football, and that's where all our tradition lies in basketball, even though the basketball team's been competitive in the Big Ten. You know, their rivals are Duke and North Carolina and Virginia, not Michigan State and Iowa and Ohio State in basketball. But the problem is the ACC wouldn't take them back. The ACC more or less said good riddance when Maryland left and said, fine, you want to go, go. You know, where would Rutgers go if Rutgers made this sensible decision to get out of the Big Ten? There is no Big East anymore, which is where they were. They'd have to take a huge pay cut to go in the American Athletic Conference, which is not a Power Five conference. So it's in some ways it might make sense, but in other ways it's just not practical or doable. The only school I know of that has gone back on a conference decision was Army, which went into Conference USA, which was a disastrous move from day one, and couldn't compete, and they got out and went back to being an independent. But Army is kind of unique because it's a national school, and like Navy, which gave up being an independent, like Notre Dame, the better example, they can get away with an independent schedule. Very few schools can afford to do that. And Army, of course, in all its other sports, is in a league, in the Patriot League, where it can compete.
John Feinstein with us. John, we had Brant Snedeker on earlier today, and you could tell he was relieved and just very pleased with his game overall, not just because he won the tournament, but because he led wire to wire, dealt with that pressure on a daily basis, and then went out the next day and accomplished certain goals. We view him as one of the good guys on tour, obviously, as we know him. How is he viewed by the guys on tour?
Oh, one of the most popular guys out there. One of the best like guys on tour among players, among media, among fans. I don't know anybody who has spent 5 minutes with Brant Snedeker or more who's not a Brant Snedeker fan. He has managed to do something that I think is very difficult to do in life. Brant's made a lot of money. I mean, he won the FedEx Cup a few years back. That's $10 million cash in your pocket right there. And, you know, he loves telling the story about how when he drove home from Atlanta that night, he stopped at McDonald's for dinner because he likes McDonald's. And Bran has managed to maintain his kind of, I don't want to say every man because that's too strong, but one of the guys' countenance through the success he's had, through the Ryder Cups he's played in, through the money he's made. And, you know, I'm sure he told you guys that his remaining goal in golf is probably to win the Masters. He's done just about everything else he ever dreamed of, made more than enough money to take care of his family forever. And he's one of the guys who I can walk up to confidently on the range and know that he'll have a few minutes to talk. Whether it's, you know, I need something specific or I'm just stopping to say, how's your family? Just a really good guy. And you made a good point, Jonathan. When you shoot 59 on Thursday, the pressure to win that week is almost unbearable. Because otherwise you become one of a number. There have only been 10 rounds of under 60 in the history of the PGA Tour, but only two of them on Sunday. So when guys shot the 59, Jim Furyk shot a 58 on a Sunday, shot the 59, in many cases they didn't win the tournament. And it's really hard. And to shoot 59 on Thursday and deal with that pressure, and, you know, CT Pan caught him on the back nine yesterday, and he calmly birdied 15 and finished strong. Good for Brant Snedeker. Couldn't be happier for him.
We asked Brant to kind of give us his sales pitch for being a part of the Ryder Cup team as a captain selection, and he said, "Oh, really, I need to keep playing well. That mm-hmm. he needs to have a few more good tournaments," and he said part of it is they're going to pick a guy who's hot, and maybe I can be that hot guy. But he also, you know, talked about he's had experience with it. He's done well. He's a good teammate. You can tell it means a lot to him, like it does a lot of the players on tour. What do you think about the possibility of Brant Snedeker being a captain selection by Jim Furyk for that team?
Well, I think Brant's right. He's got to keep playing well in these playoffs. I mean, we know that Phil Mickelson and Tiger Woods are going to be captain's picks. That's locked in. I think there's also a very good chance that Matt Kuchar will be a captain's pick. So we could be talking one spot left. Zach Johnson's certainly a candidate for that spot. Tony Finau's a candidate because he's had a very good year and he makes a lot of birdies. And if Brant can win again or contend in two of the next three or something like that, now he's won in Atlanta. We know he can win at Eastlake, and the last choice is made Sunday night after Eastlake. So if he can do something like, if he wins at Eastlake, for example, if he can play well enough, to get to Eastlake, he's 30th right now, so he'd be on the bubble. But if he plays well enough to get to Eastlake and wins, I think there's a very good chance he could make the team because, as he said, he'd be the hot guy. And because he has Ryder Cup experience, because he was a key part of that winning team in 2016. And I think there's, especially going on the road where experience matters, I think under those circumstances, there's a good chance Jim would pick him. But he's got to play well. He's got to play well these next four tournaments.
John, we always love having you on, man. Thank you for the time. We'll do it again next week.
Look forward to it, Jonathan. Thanks a lot. Yeah.